Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. We are off and running on this Tuesday, March the 2nd, 2021. 3:21, 14 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned in to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, and we have got a lot of ground to cover this morning, and a lot of big announcements coming up as the morning progresses. We're going to have a guest here join us momentarily who's going to talk about a big decision that's coming up here in the community, I believe at the end of the current month. And a lot to talk about there, a lot of interesting things going on as it has related to this pandemic, as it has related to the community we live in, and as it has related to the times that are changing. You know, it has almost been a year now since this pandemic started. I believe, I don't have the exact date, because the week that this all happened was, it was a strange week. On Monday, there was talk of it. On Tuesday, press conferences were starting to be held, and by the end of the week, schools were closing up, and businesses were getting nervous, and things were happening of that nature. It was a week in March of 2020. Who would have thought that a year would blow by this fast? But I believe the main date that this all really started to hit the fan, as it were, was around March 13th, and I believe it was a Friday the 13th, if you can believe that. That would have been last year, I believe. I think that was a Friday the 13th, because I think last year was a leap year. Who would remember? We had 10,000 things going on last year, and one of them was leap year, but nobody really cared because everything else was going on. You know, when I look back on 2020, you have to think it was supposed to be an Olympic year. That did not happen. It was supposed to be a big year for Marion as we celebrated the 100th anniversary of President Harding being elected. Nothing much really happened with that. It was supposed to be a leap year. It was the start of a new decade. It was a big year, 2020. And in the end, it wasn't exactly what we thought it was going to be. A lot of interesting things went on in 2020. All right, let's see if our guest is ready to go here. I'm sure a lot of things going on with him. You know, it's one of those things, live radio on a Tuesday morning. Had a lot of fun with the conversations that we had yesterday. It's interesting to talk about the cooking of meat. Now, I don't know why that became such an interesting topic, but it certainly did. It certainly turned into an interesting topic. And I'm still not sure if the meat I ate was undercooked or not. I don't think it was. I did not become ill. But I don't really know how you know, because as we talked yesterday, I'm not sure that you become very ill unless you catch something like salmonella from undercooked meat. And I wouldn't know how you would know that you had salmonella. I'm sure you would feel bad. So there's that. But I guess if you don't feel bad, then you don't really have to worry about it. Unless, I don't know, people get blood tests, something like that. I don't know. It's a complicated subject because, as we talked about yesterday, when it comes to red meat, we know all kinds of people who eat raw red meat, eat hamburger raw, do all kinds of stuff like that. And they don't seem to have any problem. Now, is it because it's red meat? I don't know. I don't know what the difference is, and I think our guest is coming along here now. Yes, he is. And a lot of changes going on as we continue on through this pandemic. And as I said at the top of the show this morning, March 13th, which was a Friday the 13th, and it absolutely should have been, March 13th, 2020 was the day, the last day that schools really operated normally. Can you believe it's almost been a year? Almost been a year since that happened. And of course, the biggest school district here in Marion County is the Marion City School District. And a big announcement was made very recently that there's going to be a change in how kids will be learning and have learned in the last year. And to kind of step us through that and all the things that have happened in the last year, this hour, our guest is a friend of this program, good friend, the superintendent of the Marion City Schools, Dr. Ron Arusi. Dr. Arusi, how are you?
I'm great, Scott. Good morning. Good morning to all your listeners, and thank you for having me on today. I really appreciate it.
Well, Dr. Arusi, it's an interesting time. Before we get to the announcement that will be coming out here all over the community, does it seem like a year for March 13th last year is when this all started?
Yeah, we were just talking about that. Last night we had our State of the Schools address, and it is really hard to believe that, you know, and I remember the governor's announcement on that Thursday, and my administrative team and I were sitting in what we ended up calling the war room, because we had a lot of decisions to make in a very short amount of time. And to just listen to say, hey, you know, and I remember that the governor's remarks were that school children were going to have an extended spring break. And that, you know, we're coming up on spring break here again, actually starting on March 19th. So it's almost going to be a complete year. The other interesting thing about that is March 19th is our day where all of our staff will receive the second dose of the Pfizer vaccine. So, you know, it's hard to believe that it's been a year, but, you know, it's ironically in one year we'll have the vaccination, and that's going to allow us, hopefully, you know, this opportunity to get back to some sense of normalcy.
When you look back at what will basically be almost 1 year, well, a little more than a year when this announcement happens, how do you describe this year?
Well, Scott, this is my, I think it's my 17th year as a superintendent, 33 years in education. I feel like this is my first year as a superintendent at times, because, you know, you often rely on your experiences to handle, you know, adversity and different situations that come up. There's no playbook, or, you know, there was no class that I took in my superintendent's preparation on how to deal with a pandemic. And so, you know, it's been really just, you know, I think that, you know, one of the things that we've taken away from this is really just the ability to be as flexible as you possibly can be, because in education, we are, you know, we're planners. Our teachers spend hours and hours planning for one single lesson. We spend hours and hours planning for what, you know, the next school year is going to look like, and sometimes even, you know, all of the things that go into that. You know, throughout this pandemic, it seems like every time we have a plan for something, something changes. You know, when I go way back to even as school ended last year, and in the summer, you know, we felt like all of that, we were starting to see a flattening of the curve. You remember those statements, flatten the curve, and we did that. We flattened the curve, but then we opened things kind of up, probably a little bit prematurely, but then, you know, we saw a rise in cases. So all summer long, we were planning for our students to come back full on face-to-face in about mid-June to end of June. You know, the cases were continuing to rise. We had hospitals almost reaching their capacity in their ICUs, and then the recommendation came from our health department as well as across the state of Ohio that we had to look at, you know, bringing our students back in a hybrid model, which we did. You know, we got the hybrid model kind of underway. Things flattened out again. We started to bring our elementary kids back for at least 4 days a week. And then, you know, as the Thanksgiving holiday came around, we saw an increase in cases again, which forced us to go remote for 3 weeks around spring break. So, or winter break, I should say. So, you know, now we're back at kind of making an adjustment again. So I feel like we've had probably three or four first days of school since last spring. But you know, that's just kind of a recap. I mean, obviously, there was a lot more to it over the past year, but that's kind of the way it went.
Absolutely. I believe the date is March 29th coming up. That'll be a Monday. What will happen with the Marion City School District?
Yeah, it's a really exciting day for us, for our teachers, for our students, and I would imagine our community, for the most part, is very grateful that we are going to, on March 29th, bring our students back of what we consider full-on face-to-face. Now, obviously, we have, you know, the classrooms won't look exactly like they have been in the past. We are still required to follow all of our safety protocols. The biggest difference that I think people probably should understand is that, as far as those guidelines, what's two things have given us the ability to bring all of our students back at one time. Currently, we're in our hybrid model, so we only have half the students come on Monday, Tuesday, we clean on Wednesday, and the other half come on Thursday, Friday. As we move towards our all-in model, where all of our students will be in every day, the biggest difference is, again, two things. Number one, all of our staff now will be vaccinated, and so, you know, there's a lot more comfort level of those folks coming to work in a, you know, congregate facility, because school districts, school buildings are a congregate facility, and, you know, that's typically where you see a lot of outbreaks. So our staff will be vaccinated, but the CDC guidelines, and really this is the biggest thing for us, is there's a lot more research that has gone on over this past year. There have been school districts across the state of Ohio and across America, actually, that have had their students back full time since day one. There are 7 districts in Ohio that actually had some studies done that they agreed to go through and work with the Ohio Department of Health. Now, they actually had testing brought in on a regular basis. Those schools had to allow testing to go on. But what they found is that in schools, because of mask wearing and other safety protocols, that schools are actually a safe place where there is a controlled environment, where students, again, are wearing masks, we're sanitizing, we're washing our hands, and we've not seen any internal spread among students or teachers within buildings. You know, all of the cases that we've had here in Marion City have come from outside, where, you know, a student comes and is diagnosed, or a teacher comes with and is diagnosed, but it's been contact traced back to some outside source, and we've had no evidence of at all of any internal spread. So, you know, all of that has gone into this decision that it's time to bring our students back full time.
Now, when this happens on March 29th, will all students be back every day, 5 days a week, in the classroom?
Yes. Well, let me clarify that. So, well, the first week back on March 29th is actually a 4-day week for us, because Good Friday is one of our holidays, so we have a 4-day week. But then that following Monday, we will return to, you know, our all-in 5-day-a-week model. So, but we do still have about 25% of our students that have elected to take our complete online option that we've offered. And so, when we say we're bringing our students back, that is only for those students who have been in our hybrid model. We'll still have probably close to 1,000 kids that are still on our online option.
Now, when it comes to a classroom, if a classroom, and I don't know what the average classroom is, but let's say between 20 and 30 students, when everybody is back, can everybody mm-hmm. fit in the classroom
yep.
with the... Yeah.
That's a great question, Scott, and thanks for asking that. I think that's probably one of the burning questions that are on most people's minds. So, again, and the key element to that is that the CDC, the American Pediatric Association, have now kind of, you know, when we talk about social distancing, we talk about staying 6 feet apart. There's no way that any school district that I know of, including ours, could bring all of our students back and maintain a social distance of 6 feet in the classroom. What the CDC and the American Pediatric Association are finding, based on their research, is that they feel like young people, as long as they stay what's now considered to be physical distancing, which is 3 feet apart at the minimum, are less likely to spread the disease if they're wearing masks, if they're sanitizing, and they're doing all the other protocols. So as long as we stay 3 feet apart, we can fit more kids in a classroom. Now, we don't have very many classrooms in Marion City that are over between 20 to 25 students in a classroom is typical. And the younger grades, we try to keep, especially at the elementary levels, we try to keep those class sizes down around 20, 21, 22. So here's a good kind of example of how to figure that out. In all of our new buildings that have been, were built back in, I think it was 2001, 2002, the average classroom size is 900 square feet. Kindergartens are 1,200 square feet. But they were built so that you could put 30 kids in a classroom with 3 feet of distance, thus the 900 square feet. Now, we don't have 30 kids in a classroom, so we're pretty confident that we're going to be able to maintain the at least 3 feet of physical distancing within the class.
Now, when it comes to the high school and the middle school, I would think this would be a bigger issue because there is just one middle school, just one high school, as opposed to several elementary schools. When kids come in the morning, students, and they congregate in the halls, and after school they talk with each other, how do you control that with the majority of students back for the first time since March 13th?
Yeah, that's been an issue, since day one, even in a hybrid model. Our staff has done a really good job in preparation for bringing our students back. So, our teachers and classrooms, when you come into a class at the middle or high school, because we have classroom changes, number one, when our students are in the hallway, we keep them moving. And our teachers are out in the hallway, and they're guiding our students, talking to them, keeping them moving, making sure that, no one's congregating or staying in one place. The second thing is when they do come in the classroom, we spend, first couple minutes of every class sanitizing, wiping down desks, making sure that, we do a good job with the sanitizing part. One of the concerns for us has been from the beginning, how do we make sure that in lunch, because, we have a lot more kids in one facility, but we've been able to work that out in both the middle school and the high school. To get kids spaced out, now we use dividers. We purchased plexiglass dividers that we can use for every student, so there's an extra layer of protection in there. But, those are all some of the things that we've done. I mean, we have, some of our custodians look like Ghostbusters these days. They've got big backpacks, they're walking around, and they sanitize classrooms. They're in the bathrooms in between classes, and every night, each one of those classrooms gets a full sanitizing procedure that we've developed over this past year.
When it comes to such things that have been more congregational, like gym class or art class or after-school programs, where people are not just in a desk teacher instruction, are those things going to be able to return to somewhat normalcy?
Yeah, they'll be a little bit different, Scott. We try to make sure that we're mindful of when we are together and there's those instances of students being closer than 6 feet and they're with one another, we try to limit those opportunities to less than 15 minutes or less. And that's, again, some CDC guidelines to say, we need to put, five or six kids at a what we call a kidney table to do some guided reading activities. We try to make sure we're mindful of the time spent. So, again, those are all part of the CDC, Ohio Department of Health, all of those recommendations. Chrissy Sprinkle is our school nurse here, and she does an outstanding job of keeping up to date with what those recommendations are. She's in constant contact with Tracy Kinsler and her staff over at Marion Public Health. Everything we do, we run by the health department to make sure that it has their blessing. And they give us recommendations on a regular basis. We have what's called a COVID defense team here in Marion County, which is the public health, some government officials, and the five county school districts that meet on a regular basis to make sure that we're up to date and up to speed with all of the latest recommendations.
It's interesting because you had talked about staff receiving vaccinations. Was that optional for staff, or do you have to take the vaccination to come back?
No. Nope. That is definitely an option for our staff. We have over 70-some percent of our staff. We believe that, you know, there's obviously FERPA and privacy issues when it comes to that, but Ohio Health, again, another shout-out to one of our great entities that is located here in Marion County. Ohio Health was our partner for that. I know that we've had over 500 vaccines in one day delivered, and they did an outstanding job of that. But no, you know, that's all a voluntary effort. But our staff, I think, was thrilled to be included in that Group 1B, that the fact that the governor and folks down in Columbus recognize that our kids need to be back in school and that our teachers are essential workers. Our teachers and our staff members are essential workers to be included in that. I think we feel very grateful. You know, obviously there's issues outside of, you know, around the vaccine, whether, you know, an individual's personal health care provider, their doctor, their physician, makes a recommendation for whatever reason that they don't receive the virus. And we've had that's the case in some, you know, with some of our folks, but yeah, the great majority of our people were vaccinated, or at least received their first round. Again, we will receive the second round on March 19th.
Were you surprised, and not just with the school, but the people who were offered the vaccination starting after the first of the year, that I don't know if it's the majority, I don't think it is the majority, but a good number of people opted not to take the vaccine for whatever reason, and it seemed to be younger people more than older people. Did that surprise you?
You know, God, nothing really surprises me in this day and age anymore. I think that, you know, there's been over the past year just such an air of mistrust, I think, when it comes to science and some of those things. And for whatever reason, I guess that's, you know, whatever, somebody else to, or another show maybe to talk about another topic. I just think that, you know, there's some folks that were very apprehensive about, you know, if you think about typically a vaccine, if you listen to Dr. Fauci, and typically a vaccine might take 2 or 3 years to develop. So we did this in 6 months or 6-7 months that we, you know, had a vaccine available and was able to test it and make sure that, you know, there were no longstanding side effects and it actually works. So, you know, but I still think there's that skepticism that's out there, and that's an individual choice, I think, that people have. But I think that, you know, it's just been over the last year, even with the virus. I mean, if you look at the politicization, I guess, of the virus, there's just some mistrust out there.
When the students return to school on March 29th for 4 days and then the following week 5 days of in-person learning, how do you think this will affect them the most? What will this change the most?
Well, you know, I think it's, you know, our kids and our teachers in school, we get into routine. So I would imagine that the first week, you know, it will be a lot of us just really talking to our kids about, you know, how this has affected them over the last year. In Marion City Schools, we spend a lot of time with our kids on the social emotional development. And so the first week we are going to dedicate a lot of our time to what we call, you know, restorative type circles, where we're going to be talking to the kids about their experience, you know, make sure that we're easing all of their fears that they might have. And also, you know, really just to talk about what the rest of the school year is going to look like. I mean, these kids have been through a lot. You know, last summer and last spring, and we were talking today in our extracurricular meeting, committee meeting today, that spring sports are getting underway, and some of the musicals we had this past week, the sensational big event that we had was able to go on. I mean, we lost all that last spring. These kids didn't have any of that. They didn't have any prom. They had a drive-through commencement. And so this has taken its toll on our kids, and they've been deprived of some of the things that really are, you know, a lot of the fun in school has been kind of taken away. Whether it's, you know, things like extracurriculars and musicals and proms and homecomings and all those kinds of things, the fifth grade graduation that we didn't have last year. I mean, all those kinds of things were taken away from our kids. So, I feel like there's an air of excitement that we're going to be able to do that. We need to explain to our students and our families that we're going to do the best we can to have those extra events, but we're still required to make sure we're following guidelines because the virus is still out there. So, you know, until we get our kids, you know, whatever, if there's a juvenile vaccine that comes out next year, hopefully, my wish is that there's a juvenile vaccine developed and that all of our kids can come back next year and we can put this thing to bed.
When we look at what has been called remote learning for the last year, what do you think has been the biggest obstacle with that?
Well, there's no question. I think, you know, we found last spring that, you know, there were a lot of inequities that exist amongst our students with, you know, first of all, just access to technology. That was a huge deal for us to make sure that our kids had devices, number one, and then, of course, that they had access to technology because all of our online programming, when they are remote, obviously kids need access to that. We know that there were families that might have only had one device that may have had four children at home, and it's almost impossible for them to make sure they get all their work done. You know, I can't tell you the amount of parents that I talked to that really struggled. I mean, even though, you know, last spring when things were shut down and a lot of businesses were shut down and people were home, you know, our parents out there had to become teachers and teachers' aides within a matter of days and try to figure out what the technology looks like and support them. So, and we've had to do that, you know, work with our families. Thank goodness, you know, this over the summer, the city received some CARES Act money. We were able to partner with them to extend some fiber so that we can push out some Wi-Fi to some of those areas in the community that really, really had trouble accessing the internet. So we were, you know, so the access to the technology was certainly a challenge for us.
When it comes, go ahead.
Well, and the other thing is, you know, you got to remember, and folks, you know, we are a brick and mortar school district, and for however many years since Marion City Schools has been in place, our staff, our district have been used to kids coming to school every day. You know, getting out their books, you know, getting out their paper and pencil and getting to work in the classroom. And that's what we're used to. We had to adapt within 4 days. You know, you go back to that March 12th, and the first day I think we went remote, totally remote, was March 16th. So we had about 4 days to prepare for that. For our teachers to really learn how to use the online platforms that we have, whether it's, you know, Google Classroom or Zoom or Google Meet and all of those kinds of things, which our staff had to become experts, and so did our kids. Our kids had to learn how to learn differently. So that, you know, that in itself took some time. And one of the things we're really seeing right now that's really, I think, is going to create a more of an achievement gap is we really struggle sometimes with our kids with attendance. We've worked really closely with the courts here in Marion. We're hoping that, you know, some of those kids who really struggle with attendance for whatever reason, that, you know, our summer school program is just about buttoned up here. We're going to be releasing that to the community. You know, we hope that some of those kids who really struggled with attendance can get involved in our summer school programs and make sure they're catching up and we close that achievement gap.
As this year has progressed, have we seen grades go down?
Oh, yeah. There's no question that, you know, especially our middle school and high school kids, and typically those grades are affected by when they're remote. So if you're a hybrid kid and you come on Monday, Tuesday, and your remote days are Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, those remote days, you know, there's a lot of self-directed, self-paced curriculum that is provided for those kids through our online platform. So, you know, the kid has to get up at you know, in early in the morning, log on to their computer. Sometimes we have live Zooms with our teachers. And, you know, some of our kids are just at home, you know, with maybe, you know, trying to find babysitters and things like that who are watching the kids at home with maybe not, you know, as much authority over the kids. I mean, all of those variables had to be taken into consideration, but we're certainly having an issue with attendance, and therefore, as a result of that, definitely our grades have been lower.
Is there any way to deal with that? Because obviously we say, well, we haven't been in school. We've had a year of remote learning and hybrid learning. Mm-hmm. How do we deal with that as we head into a time when kids will go back to school?
Yeah, and our teachers have done a really good job with that. We've had, after we got, you know, our first quarter last fall back, and we started to see, you know, the effects of the hybrid model and remote learning on some of our students' grades. But really at the semester is when we did a deep analysis of the data that we've collected on students. And so our teachers have done a really good job of coming up with some strategies for our students to continue to learn. You know, really, sometimes in school, we have curriculum that we consider a mile wide and an inch deep. So we try to get as much content in without digging deep into some of that content. The part of the change that we focused on is, you know, what are some of those concepts, standards that kids absolutely have to know to get from one grade level to the next. So we've narrowed some of our focus to make sure that kids have, you know, what they need specifically to move on to the next grade. And that's just a byproduct. I mean, we know that there is going to be an achievement gap that was created by this pandemic. And at some point, we're going to have to continue to assess where kids are at and make sure that we're doing everything possible to kind of individualize that instruction to get them back up to speed.
I want to talk about this in two different ways, because I think this is on a lot of people's mind, and I heard a conversation over the weekend about this. When it comes to the elementary group, the group that is for the first time learning how to be around people, learning what it's like to be in a classroom, learning how to read, all those things, is there a way to get that back? How has it affected them long term?
You know, it's interesting, Scott. I mean, we've done a lot over the last 2 years to adjust our literacy program at the elementary level. Ironically, what we're seeing, especially at grades kindergarten and K and one, we are seeing more kids right now through our assessments that are on grade level, especially with the literacy components that we have in place, than we've seen in probably 10 years here. But, you know, some of the things that we're doing, like our phonics program and those things, are very easily adaptable to online, more adaptable than anything else, because, you know, it's like a kid can get, you know, almost like a game that they can go and they can do phonics instruction and sound out letters and words and things like that. And so they have actually been able to do most of that work. I mean, a lot of the, you know, activities and application that we do while we're in school and science experiments and things like that are not as easily attainable when you're at home. But we're actually seeing some decent results, which I'm pleasantly surprised about, in our primary grades. Now, you know, some of our intermediate, which is our grades 3 through 5, which really focus more on reading, where kids have to read a lot more what we call complex text, like grade level text and things like that. We're seeing a little bit less of progress than we were to expect. So, you know, for us, it's just a matter of making sure we have assessments in place that can diagnose where kids are at and how we can, you know, figure out what issues they're having, whether it's vocabulary or comprehension or number sense in math, those kinds of things, so that we can make sure we target what those interventions are to bring them back up to speed.
When it comes to the older kids, the middle school kids, the high school kids, learning algebra for the first time, and all the things that go with high school and middle school, is that a fixable problem as well?
Well, I hope so. I think, you know, we, again, you know, these are uncharted waters, if you will, that it's almost like a grand experiment to figure out the right way to teach our kids during a pandemic. So when you have kids in class 2 days a week and they're home 3 days a week, when they're actually in school, you know, we focus a lot more on, you know, talking about the work that they've done, correcting mistakes that have been done remotely, going over the work that they've. It's almost like Mondays and Tuesdays for Group A is kind of like a homework check. So we're checking all the work you do on the remote time to make sure that when we assign the work when they're remotely, that it's appropriate for them. So, you know, that's the way it's gone. But, you know, we'll get an idea here as we get into some spring testing, you know, where our kids are at and what actual progress that we've made. I think, you know, there's an air out there that I know that testing has been an issue. I can just tell you that we don't use the state proficiency test as much for us to make decisions about instruction. We give a diagnostic test 3 times a year to our elementary and middle school kids, but we get immediate feedback on those diagnostic assessments, so we can kind of make changes in instruction along the way based on how well our kids are doing.
In the last year, not so much just the pandemic, but did we learn anything as educators, as administrators, about how schools run and about how they need to run?
I definitely. So, you know, we were able to get, we were able to make sure that all of our kids had a device. So Marion City Schools is considered a one-to-one school district. So every student has gotten a Chromebook to be able to use. So I think what we learned is that, you know, we can use a lot more technology, and I think that's a good thing. I mean, the future is going to be, you know, a lot of a child's success or a person's success, I think, in the future is going to be related to how well they can use technology, too. I mean, it's, you know, you think about the access to information that students have through technology these days as opposed to maybe when we were younger. You know, Scott, how many times do you have to go to the encyclopedia to look something up? You know, we have Google right now that you can look something up immediately on your phone. So you know, thinking about those kinds of things and the amount of information that kids have access to with technology, and now that every kid has a device, and now our teachers have been forced to, over the last year, figure out the best way to deliver that content through technology. So I really think that we're going to learn a lot more about the use of technology in a regular classroom. We were talking the other day, again, we have some CARES Act money that we've been given to really look at some of our infrastructure and technology. You know, again, back when we were in school, we had the overhead projector that teachers used. And now we have video projectors that are hooked up to either a TV or a computer. And we don't even need those anymore. I mean, we have software programs where our teacher can put, you know, up on a kid's laptop or Chromebook at every desk a certain screen, or that teacher can share up on the board what a student's doing at their desk. So, you know, I think we've been forced to really look at how we can better use technology in the classroom, and I think that's going to be a product or carryover that we've learned from the pandemic.
We've got about 8 minutes left here with Dr. Ron Arusi, superintendent of the Marion City Schools. And remember, Marion City Schools will return to 5-day in-person learning on Monday, March the 29th. That is a 4-day week because of Good Friday, but the following week, back up to 5 days. What has the staff learned? What has the staff been saying over the last years? The teachers, the janitors, the custodian, people who've been working, lunch people who work in schools?
I don't think they're given enough credit, Scott. I think that, you know, our staff members, I can't tell you how much time and effort has gone into their work during the pandemic. You know, and I know that, you know, folks will say, you know, well, we were, you know, we only have half the kids in class and kids are remote and they're basically working on their own. I mean, our teachers have to kind of take, they've had to look at, you know, planning for that instruction while the kids are there, continuing to monitor their kids while they're at home and provide those lessons for them. And then they have to take attendance every day and make sure the kids that are doing that work. I mean, the work that our teachers have in front of them right now due to the pandemic has been doubled. And, you know, they spend a lot more time and effort, you know, outside, because, you know, when the kids are there and half the kids are there, The other kids, half the kids are at home. So they're typically, teachers are going home and they're grading and answering questions and emailing kids and families back about the work that the kids were doing at home while the other kids were in school. You know, the amount of preparation and, you know, the what our custodians have had to do to make sure they're deep cleaning every inch as possible of the buildings. Our cooks are now used to, you know, we send thousands of meals home with kids during the week. So when they're not in school, we still feed them while they're at home. So our cooks in our cafeteria are feeding kids while they're here at lunch, but they're also sending meals home, you know, for those kids that are home. So, and all in the midst of, you know, many of our teachers who, and our custodians and our classified workers, who are a little bit older and are more susceptible to some of the you know, effects of the virus, and some of their fears and still coming to work every day. I just don't think we've given them enough credit. They've done an outstanding job, trying to get through and maintain a level of, progress for our students in providing that safe environment. I can't say enough about them.
There were a lot of big decisions that had to be made in the last year. Hybrid models, in-person learning, remote learning, high school sports, sports in general, who could attend games, what could happen, just a lot of decisions, and it was uncharted territory, certainly for everybody. Is there any decision, hindsight being 2020, you look back at now, and your staff looks at, and you say, I would have done that differently?
Well, I don't, it's hard to say that, Scott, because I think, again, is you know, if we had hindsight right now, and we had the research available to us to say that, you know, kids really don't, as long as they're following protocols, are very, very less likely to spread the disease. I think that, you know, if we would have been given that information, even when the community was seeing some, you know, high volume of spread, I'm not sure that, you know, the recommendations would have been consistent. But I'm not a scientist, and I don't know, you know, all of the things that go into some of those recommendations. We've said all along since March 12th of 2020 that we would rely on our scientists and our healthcare specialists to give us those recommendations on how we should operate schools. And we've done that consistently throughout the entire pandemic. And I wouldn't change that at all. I think that collectively, I wish we had the research that we have right now, because I think we probably could have made some other decisions about, you know, keeping our kids in school on a more regular basis. I mean, there's no question I wish our kids were in school every day since day one.
When we look back at this, when there was what they call an outbreak and a student got sick or a teacher got sick and tested positive with this horrible pandemic, what was that like to go through when you would get that phone call?
Yeah, I remember when we got our first case, when we came back to school and we were watching. It was about 3 weeks into school, I think, before we had our first diagnosed case of either a student or an employee in the district. And so, you know, we, at that point, the health department, you know, and again, cases were still relatively low as compared to where they went, you know, at the end of October or November. But during that first couple months of school, when we got a diagnosed case, the health department was responsible for all of the contact tracing. And so we had to submit, you know, if it was a student, we had to submit class rosters and lunchroom rosters and where kids were out in recess and those kinds of things to make sure that we contact traced and we quarantined the right amount of people. I mean, it got to the point where when we started to get close to October and November, and again, I'll give Chrissy Sprinkle and the nursing staff here in Marion City Schools, it got to the point where the health department didn't have the capacity to be able to do that. So it was kind of left up to us at that point. So, you know, whether, you know, if it was a football player that was diagnosed and we had to sit the coach down and we had to go through film and practices and determine, you know, what other student was in close contact for more than 15 minutes during that time period. I mean, it's crazy now to think about that those are all the things we had to do to make sure that we did everything in our part not to have, you know, the spread of the virus. And, you know, again, I don't know where we're at. I haven't looked at our dashboard, but I would imagine we're up probably around the 70 to 75 cases of either students or employees that have had that. But again, we have not had one single outbreak or internal spread. Now, we did have to close a building down because of contact tracing. So we had one employee who had no idea that they were sick. They were asymptomatic, that came and actually was in school the entire week and was in close contact with both groups A and B. So we had to shut that elementary down for 2 weeks. We had to quarantine the entire staff. But again, it wasn't because there was an outbreak, but it was done to prevent any further spread due to close contact.
As we get ready to wrap up here because of time constraints, I just have a two-part question. As March 29th approaches, is there any apprehension when students go back full-time in-person learning? And how do you feel the community, because certainly the schools are a part of the community, has reacted to this?
You know, I think there's, again, it's based on your individual feelings towards that, and we've tried to make sure that we accommodate everybody. I mean, we are still offering our online program for those families and those students who still have, you know, some fears about that, or might have, you know, some situations where they're more vulnerable than others because of some pre-existing conditions. So we're really trying to accommodate most of that. But, you know, from what I get from the community, I think that we are all ready, and we realize that it's time to send our kids back to school. We are a lot more comfortable because now we have the vaccine, and we know that the research tells us that as long as we're doing and following protocols, we are very less likely to spread the disease. Mm.
Dr. Ron Arusi, superintendent of the Marion City Schools, a very important day coming up, March 29th, the return of five-day-a-week in-person instruction. And again, actually the 5 days will happen the following week because of Good Friday being that week. Dr. Arusi, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. Come back anytime. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, Scott. Appreciate you. Have a good day.
Bye-bye. There you go. So that's what's happening in our world. We'll be back after this break.
Really, really big names from Celebrity Apprentice, and I think it really, really is.
Now, what do we have in store for your big acceptance speech Thursday night?
Get to that. I have to talk. You're terrible, terrible, terrible governor.